is one thing. The people are another. I rely on the people.
Mumia Abu-Jamal. His hearing will be on Thursday in Philadelphia. And that does it for our broadcast tonight. I'll be at the University of Windsor, Ontario at 7:30. Tomorrow in Detroit. And tomorrow is Studs Terkel's 95th birthday. He will be our guest for the hour. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shruth Padokadus, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Aaron Mattei, Jen Utes, Mike DeFilippo, Nick Marsilio, Miguel Noguera, our engineer. Special thanks to Angela Alston, Becca Staley, Hugh Grant, John Randall, Jerome Bourgeois, Jose Miranda, Tori Townsend, Nicole Salazar, Samantha Chambly, Karen Renucci, Julie Crosby, Dennis Moynihan, Isis Phillips. Our website, again, is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Lenny Kaye from the Patti Smith Band. You're listening to WUSB 90.1 FM from Stony Brook, whence the Blue Oyster Cult originated.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, New York, where it's just exactly 6 o'clock. And that means, once again, it's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Well, it's once again 95 degrees inside the studio. You know, I think the university has declared war on us. I really do, because usually what happens in the springtime, when it first gets warm outside, they pump the heat in. I don't know, just to sort of prove who's boss or something. But this has been going on now for months. And I honestly, I think it does something to your brain. I think you think a little slower and you move a little slower. And maybe that's the idea, is to keep us in line so that we don't make any sudden moves, audio-wise or otherwise. Well, regardless, I've got a fan here. It's blowing full on my face. I don't know if it makes any noise on the microphone. I don't care. This is insane. welcome. Welcome. Another edition of Off the Wall. We'll be taking phone calls today, hopefully a bunch of them, so please get your dialing fingers ready. The phone number is area code 631-632-WUSB. That's 631-632-9872. For those of you outside the country, country code is 1. Last I checked. And this is not the special North Korea show, but I do have news. Next week, we will be doing the first of a couple of specials concerning my recent voyage over to North Korea. So tune in for that. That's coming up next week at this time. A bunch of local things in the news. I just happened to be going through the wires. And nice sound to it, going through the wires. Sounds so official, but basically I was reading some news, and I discovered a few things that were kind of interesting and worthy of being brought to a worldwide audience, and an audience of the future as well, since people do listen to this program in years ahead. A special hello to you. Okay, right here in the Three Village area, we call it the Three Villages. Stony Brook is one, Setauket is another, and for some reason Oldfield is a third. I don't know why. Oldfield doesn't have a post office or zip code or anything like that, which is the true definition of a village as far as I'm concerned, but they're listed as one of the three villages, so this is the three village area. And of course the Stony Brook campus is the bastard stepchild of Stony Brook Village, and the entire three village community lives in fear of the campus, which grows ever bigger and takes over more and more land as every year goes by, just like all universities seem to do this. In New York City, it's the same thing. Columbia University, NYU, they're all taking over. They're kicking people out of tenement buildings. They're closing down CBGBs and the Bottom Line and places like that. Actually, no, they didn't close down CBGBs. Somebody else did that. But it's the same basic idea, you know. Constantly taking over, expansion. We must educate more people and take over more land in the process. Do all sorts of other things. Yeah, well, okay, I don't know how I got onto that kick, but, because we're talking about the Three Village area, and the Stony Brook campus looms over the Three Village area. Literally. For those who don't know, this campus was donated back in the, was it the 50s or the 60s? And the condition was that we just built little red brick buildings, colonial-style buildings. And that lasted about a week before the first monstrosity started towering over the forests and looking down on the neighboring townspeople. And we have this incredible building. It looks sort of like a robot. And look it up on the internet if you don't believe me. It's called the Health Sciences Center here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And I gotta tell you, the reaction of the people in the surrounding community was just one of panic, I suppose. People ran away. They did. They didn't come back. This huge concrete structure just popped up out of nowhere. But it's done a lot of good for the community, I'll say that. Scared them, but done a lot of good as well. Anyway, I don't know how I got off on that tangent. You know what? It's the heat. It's the heat that makes me go off on tangents. So, I don't know. I don't know if that's of interest to anybody, but raise the temperature and you'll hear more tangents. Okay, so getting all the way back to the original story, which started this whole thing. There was a panic today. There was a panic today at one of the local junior high schools. Today is May 15th. It's another thing that happens with heat. I'll get the date wrong. May 15th. And apparently, I'm going to read the story the way it appeared in our local racist newspaper called Newsday. And you know why I call it racist. It's not because of the writers. It's because of the readers. But we'll get into that later again. Here's how it reads. When a small graffito... Now, that's exactly where I stopped. Graffito? Have you ever heard that word used before? Well, apparently, this writer, whose name is Sophia Chang, has used this word, I think, for the first time I've ever even heard it said, let alone in a news story. But apparently, it's when there's a single act of graffiti. Graffiti is plural, I suppose, and graffito is singular. Is that right? I don't know. I majored in English at this place, and that word has never come up. So let's go through the story, and the word actually gets used twice, at the beginning and at the end, but let's start at the beginning. When a small graffito saying only 5-15 was found in one of the boys' restrooms at P.J. Jolinas Junior High School in Setauket last week, school administrators didn't hesitate to tighten security today, Tuesday. The district enforced a modified lockdown. A modified lockdown with backpack checks and extra police presence at both Jolinas and the other Three Village District Middle School, R.C. Murphy Junior High School. That was the school I went to. I went to that junior high school. R.C. Murphy. R.C. stands for Robert Cushman. Robert Cushman Murphy Junior High School. In fact, Robert Cushman Murphy died while I was going to Robert Cushman Murphy Junior High School. How's that? And then, after that, I went to Ward Melville High School, and he died while I went there. Yeah. That's when I started to realize the destiny that I had. Then I came to Stony Brook and watched the town around me wither. No, only kidding. So, yeah, the two schools, by the way, are exact duplicates of each other. They are built exactly the same way. One's in one part of town, one's in the other part of town. And then the high school is a bigger version of the two junior high schools. It's like they merged and formed a super school. And they call it, in the newspaper, they refer to it as a middle school. We called it junior high school. I think it works differently here than in most parts of the country. I only found out about this not so long ago, actually. But I was brought up to go to elementary school from grades 1 to 6, junior high school from grades 7 to 9, and high school from grades 10 to 12. Now, the rest of the country, they do this middle school thing where they have ninth grade in high school. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. This is how we were brought up. This is how we like it. Anyway, District Superintendent Frank Caracitti said the day has been quiet so far. Well, I think the day is over now. And I haven't heard anything. Didn't see any smoke. Didn't hear any fire trucks. Didn't see any police chases. But according to when this story came out, which was about 2 o'clock, no incidences. No incidences? Okay, Sophia, I got to ask, you know, shouldn't the word be incidents? Because the way I recall, incidences of something, you're referring to something that is coming, like an incidence of arson, an incident of mayhem, you know? That's what an incidence is. An incident, though, is something that refers only to itself. It's kind of vague. So there was an incident, but we're not going to tell you what it was. But an incidence, that begs more words. So now I got to wonder about your whole graffito use. Maybe you just made that word up. Oh, I'm sorry. Another tangent. But the district remains vigilant, according to District Superintendent Frank Caracitti, who you can see maintaining vigil outside the district offices, being eternally vigilant. But what's curious about this story is that, if you notice, extra police presence. Extra police presence. That implies that there's always police presence at a junior high school. I think I never, ever saw police at any of the schools I went to when I was going to school, except, of course, for here, because they have police on campus. But when I went to junior high school, elementary school, kindergarten, nursery school, never saw a cop on school property. And now it's a day-to-day occurrence. They're always there. And you have words like lockdown. Amazing. And this only because 515 was scrawled onto a bathroom wall. Well, I know that probably the people who scrawled that are listening to us, because Tuesday from 6 to 7, the entire community comes to a halt and listens to the radio. So if you're out there, dial star 67 and call us. That blocks your caller ID. We don't have caller ID anyway, so we couldn't read it even if you didn't do that. And tell us what you meant by 5-15. Maybe it was a way of saying negative 10. I don't know. Anyway, Kara City said, it's the day and the age we live in. It's a shame. Can't say I disagree with that. The district is still investigating who wrote the graffito, he said. He didn't say that. Sophia said that. Sophia used the word graffito. I don't think Frank Kara City ever said the word graffito. And I don't think anybody else ever did either. Okay, so that's a little bit of local news for you today. What else? Okay, here's a good one. Darwin Award time. Three men and a woman from Suffolk County, that's the county we're in, who defaced a Middle Island church with satanic symbols, were arrested after they boasted about their graffiti on MySpace. Christine Armerio from Newsday wrote that story. Maybe Christine, you could have a talk with Sophia about the use of the word graffiti. Anyway, Detective Sergeant Robert Reeks, commanding officer of the Hate Crimes Unit. Reeks is a good name to have for the commanding officer of the Hate Crimes Unit, don't you think? He said detectives were led to the fore when someone who had seen the images of the spray-painted church on MySpace directed police there after seeing the same images on television. One of the suspects wrote on his page, "We tagged the street with spray paint, then drove to the church we passed on the way there and tagged all over it with inverted crosses, pentagrams, and sixes. It was quite the sight to see." Arrested were Daniel Wilbur, 19, of Central Islip; Daniel Dracer, 19, of Port Jefferson Station; William Santariello, 22, of Farmingville; and his brother, John Santariello, 19. Each was charged with aggravated harassment as a hate crime and extreme stupidity online. Reek said the teens claimed to have been inspired by Satanism. Come on, don't blame Satanism for pure stupidity. Last Tuesday, they had gone out looking for a wooded area to get a spiritual feeling when they came across the church. Once there, the four used black spray paint to deface the church with pentagrams and inverted crosses. They drew an arrow on the ground in the direction of the church and wrote, "This way to ignorance." Should have pointed to their homes. And finally, in the local news today, a multimillionaire Mutton Town couple. How many of you even knew there was a town on Long Island called Mutton Town? Well, I knew that. I just don't know exactly where it is, but it's out there somewhere. Multimillionaire Mutton Town couple has been arrested by federal agents on charges of keeping two Indonesian women as slaves in their Long Island home for the past 5 years and torturing one of them frequently for disobedience. The couple, Varshar Mahanda Sabnani and Mahander Malidhar Sabnani, and they give the address. I don't know. I'm not going to give the address. Look in Newsday if you want the address. I don't know what you're going to do. Go over there and point to the house or something. They ran a perfume business from their home. They're scheduled to be arraigned today on a charge of obtaining the labor and services of another person by use of threats of serious physical harm to and physical restraint against that person. One of the two Indonesian women was beaten with a stick, cut with a knife, and at one point forced to eat 25 extremely hot chili peppers. My God, where did they come up with this? And this was reportedly for not performing her work adequately. Yet, eating 25 extremely hot red chili peppers. I'm sorry, they're not red, they're just chili peppers. That's a way to teach a lesson. The two Indonesian women, whose names were not released, were told to hide in a 3-foot by 3-foot closet under a staircase when visitors came to the house and were forbidden to leave the house. What do you want to bet this is going to make it to what are those shows that only rely on things that happen in real life because they can't think of anything on their own? Law and Order, that's it, right. So Law and Order will have something, mark my words, we can refer back to this in the future. There will be an episode within the next year, next season, 2007-2008 season, where two Indonesian women will be forced to sit underneath the staircase and eat hot peppers. Anyway, the situation was uncovered after one of the women managed to escape and was found wandering near a Dunkin' Donuts in Syosset by employees who initially thought she was homeless. When the employees attempted to communicate with her, she kept slapping her face and saying what sounded to them like the word master. Unbelievable. So yeah, you know, forget about terrorism. Your neighbors could be slaveholders. it goes on in this day and age. Unbelievable. The kinds of abuse that that you can find just by looking around. The craziness, the violence. And it can happen inside families, too. You could be a slave and be related to the people who are treating you like a slave. It happens. Unbelievably sick society we're in. And there are many, many, many more examples of this. I don't want to get too depressing here, but oh, why not? A 10-year-old boy was convicted Thursday in the beating of a homeless Army veteran that left the man so severely injured he required reconstructive surgery. That happened in Florida. The boy, another 10-year-old, and Jeremy Woods, 17, all ganged up on John D'Amico, 58 years old, as he and a friend walked through a Daytona Beach neighborhood on March 27th. The older man was beaten and stoned with a concrete block. Unreal. So the kid is going to be in the juvenile system until he turns 21, or he could be given probation or counseling. Unbelievable culture we live in. 10-year-olds throwing concrete blocks at people, any person. And here's this is kind of interesting. One would almost say humorous. Do you hear about this? A fight broke out at a Boston Pops concert. Yeah, concertgoers and even Boston Pops conductor Keith Lockhart. What happened to Arthur Fiedler? What happened to Arthur Fiedler? He's not doing it anymore? I'm going to look into this. They were caught off guard when a fight broke out on opening night at usually sedate Symphony Hall. Television video of the fight last Wednesday showed two men struggling in the balcony, one with his shirt pulled off, as several people stood around them. Oh, my goodness. The Boston Pops, yeah. And you know, this is kind of weird because that very night, this was Wednesday night, that very night I was in New York City and saw pretty much the same thing. We were, after Off the Hook, we were sitting at a street cafe. It was a nice night. We figured, you know, why not? Why not just hang out outside, see the passing scene? Well, the passing scene encompassed this group of drunk people, I guess people just graduating from college or something. Who knows? Who knows what they were doing? But this one guy who also had his shirt pulled off was chasing this other shorter guy down the street. And I don't know. They were basically exchanging words about something. It was clear the shorter guy just wanted to get away from the guy without the shirt, who seemed to be very aggressive. And we're all just kind of watching this unfold right in front of us. This kind of thing does not happen in New York. I mean, it does happen, but it doesn't happen as often as you might think it happens. Generally, New York is a rather sedate place, civilized. Well, this didn't maintain its civility for very long. The shirtless guy threw a punch, but missed so completely that he wound up falling down on the ground. I think he was really in bad shape to begin with. Now, what would you think would happen? The guy who was being chased, you'd think that, okay, this is the opportunity. Just get away from the situation. Walk away. Or run away if you have to, but just get away from the situation. He doesn't do that. Instead, he sticks around and starts kicking the guy over and over and over and over again on the ground. Well, a bunch of people called the cops, which they took about 15 minutes to get there. And this thing was just going on throughout all the streets. Just basically, oh, look, they're coming back now. It just went on. I don't think anybody even landed a punch, a really good one. And certainly not with the satisfying sound that you hear in the movies or on TV. You know, that smack sound. That doesn't happen in real life. That doesn't happen. Instead, you get just a bunch of really disorganized, unsatisfying sounds and a lot of grunting and panting and unbelievable. So eventually the cops came just as they were sort of walking away. And I think all they did was talk to the people and let them go. Unbelievable. So, yeah, that's something in the air. Something in the air. And, of course, there's the violence inherent in our system. What else? Oh, this is unbelievable. Did you hear about this? Staff members of an elementary school staged a fictitious gun attack on students during a class trip in Tennessee, telling them it was not a drill as the children cried and hid under tables. The mock attack on Thursday night was intended as a learning experience and lasted 5 minutes during the week-long trip to a state park. said Scales Elementary School Assistant Principal Don Bartsch, who led the trip. We got together and discussed what we would have done in a real situation, he said. But parents of the sixth grade students were outraged. The children were in that room in the dark, begging for their lives because they thought there was someone with a gun after them, said Brandy Cole, whose son went on the trip. Some parents said they were upset by the staff's poor judgment in light of the April 16th shootings at Virginia Tech. And details. During the last night of the trip, staff members convinced the 69 students that there was a gunman on the loose. They were told to lie on the floor or hide underneath tables and stay quiet. A teacher disguised in a hooded sweatshirt even pulled on a locked door. Principal Catherine Steffens declined to say whether the staff members involved would face disciplinary action, but said the situation involved poor judgment. My God, is there ever a clearer case of child abuse than this? All these people get so upset and outraged at people being exposed to all sorts of inappropriate things, whether it be on television or in real life. What more do you need than this? This is simply insane to put this kind of fear into people. This is going to stick with them for the rest of their lives. They won't be able to hang out in the forest or see somebody with a hooded sweatshirt or go back to their school. I mean, it's just simply incredible the mentality of the people in charge that they think something like this would be an educational experience. We really have a lot of sickos out there who think that it's okay to teach elementary school kids how to attack a gunman in their classroom and what to do so that maybe 2/3 of them will get out alive. It's okay to put those kind of thoughts into people's heads. That's fine. Of course, say the slightest thing having to do with sex or something that they consider to be immoral, and all of a sudden that's the worst possible threat. The rest of the world looks at us and just, they're speechless. That's why you don't hear them saying anything, because they're speechless. Other places, they are confounded by our absurd morality in weird places and our crazy immorality in others. Okay, what else? Here's an example of the crazy sense of morality. Remember the case in Boston? The Aquatine Hunger Force, you know, the signs that appeared, and everybody in the city thought it was some kind of terrorist attack after these things had been there for several weeks. Well, the two men who planted those electronic devices in a botched television promotion, only botched because idiots chose to interpret it in a way that, I don't know, even the movies wouldn't be able to, to tell a decent story with. It prompted a bomb scare, but they were not the ones who started the bomb scare. It's important to realize that fact. They apologized on Friday and performed community service to resolve the criminal charges against them. Peter Berdovsky and Sean Stevens said they never expected the stunt to cause any turmoil. I deeply regret that this incident caused such anguish and disruption to so many people, Berdovsky said. He said the devices, he saw them as simply harmless entertainment. I had no intention of upsetting or alarming anyone. Well, this is all true. It's kind of sad that they have to appear contrite in front of everybody so that they don't get sent to prison. But from what I can read of the story, they were not fined and they were not imprisoned. They were just forced to do community service, which they probably were doing anyway because these guys live in the community and their mere existence, I think, is community service. That's how I feel about people who make displays of art and are creative and adventurous and don't buy into this nonsense. But do you remember when the story came out? How insanely crazy the newspaper reports and the government officials were? These people will be sent to prison. They're terrorists. They're just like Al-Qaeda. And let's see, what else? Anything else in the violent... Well, you have the LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department's violent response to the end of an immigrant demonstration is the latest incident highlighting what critics describe as the force's warrior culture. It's an ethos that's been on display before, the use of clubs and tear gas to disperse 15,000 peaceful anti-war demonstrators in Century City in 1967, the Rodney King beating in 1991, the harsh crackdown on demonstrators at the 2000 Democratic National Convention. The only positive thing that comes out of all this is that it's being recognized quickly as something sick, something that needs to be dealt with. And, you know, we awarded the Darwin Award earlier to the people who vandalized the church in Middle Island and bragged about it on MySpace. But, you know, I think maybe this one usurps that. This is a story that comes out of Lake Luzerne, New York. A young man shot himself and managed to do it without using a gun. Yeah, that's right. Damien Mosher, who put bullets in a vise and whacked them with a hammer to empty the brass shell casings, was hit in the abdomen by one of the shots, according to authorities. They were called to Mosher's home on Saturday afternoon after one bullet went about a half inch into his abdomen. He was treated and released. No charges were filed. Too bad you can't charge somebody with stupidity, but apparently you can't. So, those gun people out there who are really into firing guns, you don't need to have a gun anymore. You can just fire the bullets. Incredible. All right, let's see. We have this crazy story, actually. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the post office raised its rates yesterday here in the United States, and they've done it in such a way that it makes mailing things so difficult, so impossible, so unpleasant. I have to wonder, are they trying to make people just not use the post office anymore? Either just rely on electronic communication completely, or use some other means of receiving things, such as FedEx or UPS or one of the others. The postal rate increase kicked in on Monday, and it's shaping up as a very big headache for many businesses. 2,600 not excluded from that, for sure. We've been going nuts trying to figure out how much things cost now. Many companies say they are confused and frustrated as they try to adjust to the new rules, and some say mailings could be severely curtailed due to higher postage costs. The new regulations mean larger envelopes and packages will automatically cost more than smaller mail. Now, currently, or before Monday, postage was determined by weight, unless it was an especially large or odd-shaped package that warranted special handling. So, if you're thinking of stuffing more things into a smaller envelope to get around this, there are new thickness restrictions as well. For first-class letter envelopes, the allowed thickness is 1/4 inch. If you go over 1/4 inch, you run into more costly large envelopes or parcel rates. Yeah, now thickness matters now. It's unbelievable. Direct Marketing Association in New York is very, very unhappy, said a spokesperson. I don't really care about them so much. I care about people mailing letters and legitimate businesses mailing things that people have asked for. But, you know, if you have a scale and you want to mail something, you put it on the scale and you figure out how much it costs. But now that doesn't work anymore. Now you have to take into account the dimensions and the size and the thickness. And this, all of this doesn't even take into account something really bad, which is coming in July. Threatened to be coming in July. And that is a new rate structure for publications. And yeah, that will affect us at 2600 because we are a publication and we do take advantage of the periodical mailing rate. But apparently, at the behest of none other than Time Warner, I couldn't make this up. Time Warner basically gave an idea to the post office on a new rate structure, which would be incredibly complicated. So complicated that we don't even know yet how much it's going to cost to mail something. So complicated that the post office themselves had to delay implementing it for another 3 months. Actually, 2 months. Because they have no idea how much it's going to cost or how they're going to figure things out. But basically, this rate structure would raise rates incredibly high. From what I've heard, and again, I can't point to specifics because nobody can seem to figure this out, but from what the reading of the proposal, which was submitted, smaller publications would wind up paying a huge amount more, and huge publications, by huge I mean things like Time Magazine, Time Warner, Time Magazine, they would actually pay less. Yeah, and Time Warner came up with this idea, submitted it to the post office. The post office said, yeah, okay, why not? And that's what we're facing right now. As we learn more, we'll tell you more. But right now, all I hear is a lot of outrage without specific information. And it's because the specific information is so complicated and convoluted. I suspect by the time July rolls around, the voices will be a lot louder, and we'll know a lot more about this. But really, it's pretty crazy. Just more bad news. It just never seems to stop. Okay, 631-632-9872 is our phone number. I'd like to read a couple of things here. Some quotes, actually. These are floating around on the internet. These are quotes from Republicans. Quotes from Republicans on the war. Well, on military action, anyway. And they're kind of surprising. Listen to this. This is Representative Tom DeLay. Well, when he was still doing his job. Republican of Texas. Listen to what he said. You can support the troops, but not the president. Joe Scarborough, Republican of Florida, said, I just think it's a bad idea. What's going to happen is they're going to be over there for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. Sean Hannity of Fox News, you all know him, explained to the mothers and fathers of American servicemen that may come home in body bags why their son or daughter had to give up their life. How about Senator Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania? The president is once again releasing American military might on a foreign country with an ill-defined objective and no exit strategy. He has yet to tell the Congress how much this operation will cost, and he has not informed our nation's armed forces about how long they will be away from home. These strikes do not make for a sound foreign policy. Wow. Who said Republicans don't have some degree of integrity? Well, I'll say it because these quotes come from the Clinton administration when President Clinton was taking military action in Kosovo. Yeah, all these guys were pretty silent when it came to Bush invading Iraq. But when Clinton was doing something significantly smaller with the cooperation of NATO, and in my opinion, something that was a whole lot more justified, this is the reaction that you saw. It's all about politics. Senator Trent Lott, Republican of Missouri. Mississippi. I had doubts about the bombing campaign from the beginning. I didn't think we had done enough in the diplomatic area. Or how about Karen Hughes speaking on behalf of George W. Bush? If we are going to commit American troops, we must be certain they have a clear mission, an achievable goal, and an exit strategy. Ho, ho, ho. And how about then-Governor George W. Bush himself? Victory means exit strategy, and it's important for the president to explain to us what the exit strategy is. Unbelievable. All right, we're going to be taking some phone calls in just a couple of minutes. I see we have phone calls, and I want to thank those people for calling in. We're almost ready for you. Just want to read a couple of letters, and you can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. And 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Let's race through these letters really quickly and get to those calls. Dear Emmanuel, first, congratulations on that nice adventure in North Korea. That's some serious balls you got. Well, thank you. Surely you've heard about the alleged North Korean gulag, slave labor camps where a large minority of the population supposedly lives and works. Now, I have no way to be sure that the reports and eyewitness accounts of what I've heard weren't fabricated, sort of like the Iraqi soldiers killing Iraqi babies incident of the run-up to the first Iraq War. But I find it somewhat credible that this gulag exists and that the people stay in line and don't rebel for fear of being deported there along with their loved ones. That leaves me two questions for you. Based on what you've seen in your travels, do you have any more reason to believe that these camps do or don't exist than before you went? Well, the answer is not really. There's no way I would know one way or the other if such places existed. What I can say is that looking at the people around me, the way they interact, I didn't see a whole lot of fear. I've seen crowds that looked somewhat frightened of things going on around them. I've seen people, for instance, in Belarus, the first time I went to Belarus, people seemed very cowed. They seemed less so the second time I went there. But in this particular case, where I saw people anyway, especially the younger people, seemed to be full of spirit, full of fun, full of humor. Now, that's not to say that I didn't see unhappy people. I saw lots of unhappy people as we took a train through the countryside, and you saw people in fields as we drove a bus through the countryside as well. A lot of people in the rice fields, a lot of people farming, and just look kind of haggard and worn out. I don't know if that's fear or just resignation. But to be honest, I've seen the same looks on faces of people as I drive past farms in middle America as well. Just more of them, because there are more people working on the farms. Here you'd literally have one person standing in a field and with an ox tilling the soil. And, you know, I guess you have to do that to realize how hard it is. And it really must take a lot out of you. Second question. Assuming for a second time, that the gulag does exist and that the reasonably normal and happy life of the majority of North Koreans is made possible in a large part by the slave labor of hundreds of thousands of innocents, and that those North Koreans who are quote-unquote free are pacified by the possibly unspoken threat of the gulag, how would that affect your perception of the place? Well, it's kind of a loaded question there. I mean, yeah, assuming that all this evilness is going on someplace, that would certainly tarnish your image of the society that you saw. Absolutely. But I think what we need to do is get facts, find out the truth. And I'll tell you this, one way you don't find out the truth is by not speaking, is by isolation, is by abandoning people and leaving them to their own devices. And that's what I feel has happened to North Korea now. People have been pretty much isolated and left on their own, and they're doing the best they can to survive. They really are, like turning off the lights and using as little machinery as possible and not eating as much as we're certainly used to. I just think that we'd get a lot further and address these concerns and find out what's really going on if we were more open and communicated more. And that's really what I learned from this. Anyway, thanks, Fred from Quebec City, for writing in. Sandy writes, some of the opera pieces you were playing during your last show are actually in Russian and not in Korean. And you're right. Yes, a couple of people wrote in to say that in fact, the pieces we were playing were in Russian. And wow. Okay. I'd like to know more. If people out there can translate that. We were playing a couple of weeks ago some bits from North Korean radio. Okay. And let's see. What else do we have here? I just listened to Off the Wall from May 1st. In that show, you talked a good bit about gun control laws in the wake of the Virginia Tech massacre. While I agree with you, I've always felt that my own beliefs on this subject versus my beliefs on censorship are somewhat contradictory or hypocritical. I am curious, how do you resolve this? For example, you mentioned how having guns in the hands of lots of people is a recipe for disaster when one of them goes nuts and happens to have a gun with them. You also said how having lots of guns makes it easier for a lunatic to get one. But at the same time, information in the Anarchist Cookbook, to take one example, could be just as dangerous in the hands of an unstable person. Some of the information in 2600 could be dangerous, but most of the people who read it are law-abiding citizens who don't use the information to harm anyone. Many of the same arguments that could be used to take guns out of our hands could very easily be used to censor media that is deemed dangerous, especially something like the Anarchist Cookbook, or a website with instructions on how to make a bomb. Again, I support gun control and I don't support censorship. I just have a nagging feeling that this is self-contradictory and I wanted to know how you resolve this. Well, thanks for the letter. Thanks for the honest feelings. And I think one of the mistakes that we make when dealing with things like this is basically buying into facts that aren't necessarily facts. By saying that speech is the same thing as guns. It's not true. They're not the same. People do not die from speech. They do not die from websites. They do not die from the Anarchist Cookbook. Now, yeah, they can die from something that somebody builds as a result of reading something that shows instructions on how to do this. But you know what? That's the problem. The problem is a person who does that. The problem is the device that they build. The problem is the fact that they would use it against innocent people or even guilty people. Very, very different. You're one step removed when you silence speech. Then if you look at a problem that is directly causing death, and the other fact that I think we basically have given up, and by we I mean we as a society, is this assumption that this is what the Founding Fathers had in mind. And you know what? Even if the Founding Fathers had this in mind, hey, I'll say it: the Founding Fathers were wrong. Because what we have now is not good. It's bad. Yeah. Now, look at situations in the world. Look at the recent events in Turkey, for instance. and various other regimes, where all of a sudden the country is facing a possible leadership by somebody who could do real damage. And it's because of some kind of loophole that he got in that position in the first place. And what they do is they fix it. They fix the loophole. They say, you know what? We as a society do not want this. And we're going to make sure that we don't fall into this trap again. And so they'll fix their system. They'll revise their constitution to make it work for the people who live in the present. Not people who lived 200 years ago. But, you know, I don't think it needs to even come to that. Because I think most of what's written in the Constitution is pretty accurate. It makes sense. But I don't think the people who wrote the Constitution, the people over 200 years ago, had this in mind. Where everybody felt they had the right to go to Kmart and buy ammunition and be able to blow up schools and things like that. No. Read the Second Amendment. There are different interpretations, but the one I believe in is the well-armed militia. It's right in there. It's right in there. Well-armed militia, and there's a comma in a very strategic place. And if you read the comma, if you understand how commas work, they're defining what a well-armed militia is. How it's well-regulated. Not well-armed, well-regulated. And that is basically where the rights to own guns will not be impinged. Not every Tom, Dick, and Harry everywhere in every place. Well regulated. It's right in there. So I don't know, by giving that up, by just handing it over and saying, yeah, the Second Amendment guarantees everybody the right to buy whatever armaments they want. You know, why? Why would you get rid of your biggest ally, namely the Constitution, which says it right there, explains what they mean. And, you know, the funny thing is, 30, 40 years ago, this wouldn't have been an issue. People basically interpreted it that way back then, in the 70s and the 60s. You didn't have the kind of NRA madness you have today. So it's not just going back 200 years ago. Go back only a few decades. This is all part of the new right. And the way they've changed the way we think, the way we perceive things, the way we think of history. It's just sad. Okay, sorry for the rant there, but, well, you asked. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. Love to hear from you. But right now we're going to take some phone calls at 631-632-9872. Let's go to our first call. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, Emmanuel. It's Mark calling from Nanaimo in Canada. And I missed out the very beginning of your show, so I don't know if you covered this story at all. Do you know anything about the Canadian poppy quarters?
No. Why don't you tell me?
Okay. In Canada, we issued 30 million quarters in 2004 to commemorate Canada's 117,000 war dead. Defense contractors working in Canada went back to the United States, found some in their cup holders in their pockets, and thought that this was some sort of sophisticated listening device. And one of the comments from them is, it did not appear to be electronic in nature or have a power source. Under high power microscope, it appeared to be complex, consisting of several layers of clear but different material with a wire-like mesh suspended on top. Well, they basically thought that there was some sort of surveillance taking place by a foreign power, not Canada, but the Defense Department ended up for several years issuing three separate occasions. The Defense Security Service, agency of the Defense Department, issued an advisory on these quarters that you could get at Tim Hortons, which is, I know you go to Canada to get your smart car service.
Right.
you've probably seen Tim Hortons. It's like Dunkin' Donuts. It's a Canadian donut chain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were distributing these quarters, and all Canadians know about them, but the level of paranoia to interpret a quarter, and the ironic thing is that the little centerpiece in the quarter, the red poppy, is red. If you were going to make a sophisticated nanotech device, would you make it bright red in the center of a quarter?
Maybe if you were an agent of a communist regime, but no, I don't think so. It's what I'm curious about. Do these people think what kind of surveillance do they think all these quarters would give them? Is there somebody listening to every single quarter someplace? How would it work?
Document the lint in your pocket. I have no idea how much change you're carrying in your pocket. Forward that to the IRS. I have no idea, but I can forward you an email on the issue if you want to look into it some more.
Sure.
I think it's hilarious. But frightening at the same time.
Well, it is frightening to see how much time we spend on silly things and how much time we spend ignoring the important things. And I think this is a good example. And I don't want to be guilty of that either, but thanks for letting us know. And send the email. We'll read it on a future show.
And I would love to interview you sometime on my own radio show in Nanaimo. So I'll send you an email about that, too.
You do a radio show?
I do a radio show.
Would you like to tell us when it's on and where?
It's on CHLY, Radio Malaspina in Nanaimo. It's Altered Egos. It's on from 9 a.m. Pacific to 11 a.m. And tomorrow we'll be talking about some social justice issues and the airport expansion here that's happened with zero public consultation, zero transparency.
And does this broadcast over a radio station or on the internet?
No, you can get a web stream at chly.ca.
Okay, and that's a radio station too then?
That's the radio station's Chile. That's our name for it. I love your show. You're the reason I wanted to get into radio.
Oh, well, shucks. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you very much for your hard work.
All right. Nice to hear that. Always nice to hear that I inspired somebody to do something. Even if it's something bad, it's a place in my heart for that. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Not too bad. I'm from England. Regarding the fight scene that you saw, that's kind of common practice every Friday and Saturday night due to binge drinking in pretty much most of the cities in England.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming more and more prevalent, to be honest. About a year ago, they introduced moves to cut down on it by extending the hours that pubs would be open and alcohol could be sold.
Right. Now, as I recall, pubs in England used to close at 11 p.m. even on weekends, and now they can be open 24 hours? Is that how it works?
Pretty much, yeah. You have to apply for the license, but quite a lot of pubs have done this.
So at 7 in the morning, if I want a drink, I can stumble into a pub somewhere and get one.
Pretty much, yeah. And the reason being, at 2 o'clock, say when the nightclubs closed, there used to be an awful lot of fighting. So by extending the hours, the reasoning behind it was that it would stagger the time that people would leave, thus avoiding the fighting and all the trouble that would be caused.
And has that worked out?
Not really, no.
Is there the same amount of fighting, more fighting, or less fighting? How does it add up?
Well, the logic behind it is flawed, to be honest, because a lot of the people who go to the pubs in England tend to go out looking for trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've any sense, really, you tend to avoid the city centres on the night time, or quite a lot of them in the north of England, where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, you could look at somebody funny. And simple as that, a fight could kick off, you know.
You know, I have to say that the UK is another violent culture. You don't have nearly the same problem with guns that we do. But I think if you all had a lot of guns, then you would.
Absolutely, yeah. And to be honest, it's getting that way now. There's an awful lot of stabbings in England.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently on the news, there's been three within the space of 3 weeks, all involving teenagers as well.
Right. And that's what it goes to show, that if you have a violent society, people are going to attack each other with sticks if necessary. You're still going to have a lot of violence and a lot of injuries. But when you introduce guns into it, you have a lot more. And the flip side of that, there are cultures that are fairly peaceful, such as, I don't want to ruin it for them. But basically, there are countries where people generally aren't as violent as we are here in the States or in the UK. And yeah, you know what? You could give guns to everybody there and probably nobody would get hurt. So the guns are part of the problem. They're not the whole problem. The real problem is the violence in society, and that's what we really have to address.
I think as well, I might be wrong on this, but I think it's a class divide as well that supposedly doesn't exist, but obviously does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in people with more money than other people, et cetera, better
right.
upbringings, you know, it kind of cascades into people have got very little left to do other than go out and kind of prove herself in pretty much primitive ways.
Yeah, of course. The more have-nots you have, and the more that the haves are accumulating, the bigger the resentment is going to be. And yeah, you're going to see this manifest itself in all sorts of ways. We're seeing it here in our country, and we'll see it worldwide. We have in the past.
Absolutely. And also about the, you was talking, I think, about the stone block.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that happens. You get on the overpasses, I think you call them, the bridges over the motorways, we call them. There's been quite a few deaths where kids have actually stood on the overpasses and hurled large objects off, which have gone through windscreens of trucks and cars.
Incredible.
You know, and it's, you do have to wonder exactly what's, you know, inspiring people to go out and do that.
It's just a complete lack of regard for your fellow humans. And that's something that I think is a problem worldwide.
And sir, it's, I think it's been passed down through generations as well, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely, you know, absolutely.
Got that lack of regard from, you know, people before them, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And with that kind of logic, it can only get worse before it gets better, I would have thought.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed that it gets better. Thanks, thanks for your call, and keep it peaceful over there.
Absolutely.
Take care. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Excellent. I was just calling to say that also, you inspired that one guy. I just heard the call. I didn't hear the rest of the show, but I heard your show last week, and you played that Serial.
Yes.
And that was really good. I really liked that.
You liked that. Okay. I was afraid people might get turned off by it because it was from, like, the 50s, and we don't have the same sense of humor or same sense of listening to the radio as we did back then. But
oh, no, it was hilarious.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
That's good to know. It's good to know that people still can get it.
I think I'm going
to
make one.
Well, good. Yeah. More power to you. Let us know when you do. We'll play it on the radio.
Oh, yeah. I'll send it in as soon as it's done.
Okay, cool. And where are you calling from?
Iowa.
Iowa. Awesome.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Thanks for that phone call.
Yep.
And let's see. We had a flurry of calls there. But now we can get back to our letters, I guess, for a moment. It seems like Al Jazeera English is available on the Galaxy 25 satellite. This is according to Cassandro. The same satellite seems to carry lots of interesting international channels. According to the footprint, I estimate that in New York, you'll need a dish with less than 1 meter. I personally would recommend 80 centimeters for good reception, but 60 centimeters might also give you a picture. Remember, bigger is better. You know, it's interesting. Al Jazeera English is one of those channels that I really would like to see. You know, they have a lot of good American reporters and English-speaking reporters working for them. And basically, in our country, it's another example of how we shut out things that we don't understand. And Al Jazeera is a news network. You know, they were recently kicked out of Iran because the Iranian government doesn't like the things that they were saying about their government. They don't like the fact that they report news the way they see it. So it's not something that only the United States feels sensitive about. It's something almost every regime feels sensitive about, which to me says they're doing a good job journalistically. And actually, this is something else that I wanted to tell people. When I was in Austin a couple of months ago, I basically got a big bag of junk from the South by Southwest conference. And for some reason, one of the pieces of paper in there was a cable channel lineup for Grand Communications, which I guess is one of their cable companies down there. And I noticed that, in fact, in Austin, Texas, you can get BBC World. Yeah, the BBC channel, the news channel that I've been bitching about for the last few years, that actually, I don't know if it's coincidental, but the cable company here in Long Island actually carries them now on channel 104. But if you're in Austin, you can get it now on channel 122. Yeah, 122. Now, I have not seen that reflected yet on Wikipedia, so let's see if any Off the Wall listeners can update the BBC World entry for where it's covered in the United States. Slowly but surely, alternative news sources are making their way into our lives. And it's funny to think of BBC as alternative, but in this country, it is. All right, that's going to do it for us. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for writing in, for calling in. Remember, next week is our first special on North Korea. And why not leave with a quote, something I found on the net. Find most of the things on the net. Christianity, the belief that a cosmic Jewish zombie who was his own father, can make you live forever if you symbolically eat his flesh and telepathically tell him you accept him as your master so he can remove an evil force from your soul that is present in humanity. Because a rib woman was convinced by a talking snake to eat from a magical tree. Makes perfect sense to me. See you next week. Good night. Sorry, I don't usually do this, but I feel it's important to break it and turn this to live. Switch the audio to live, and you'll hear the music much better. Sorry.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.